Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There we go. So, take two.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. It's Mary in Toronto. I'm not contrary on Twitter. And I'm calling to wish you happy Wood anniversary, fifth anniversary. I remember early Dumpty Dums, so coming up to the fifth anniversary of my father's death. He died on April the 17th, 2014. And then I was in the UK, jet-lagged and overcome with grief for a few weeks after that. And I remember lying in my old childhood bedroom in the small hours listening to Dumpty Dum. I can't remember how I found it, I think on Twitter. And it just really brought some silliness and fun into a difficult time for me. I think I listened to the first few episodes, you know, in a binge altogether, and definitely one of them was the fallout from Kirsty and Tom's wedding that didn't happen. And Google tells me that was on the 24th of April. So I guess you were recording in that kind of mid to late April period. Of course, Royfield's great remix of Kirsty's agonising scream. And just the silliness and fun was, I really appreciated that. And then I think I said this before on the podcast that my first call to Dumpty Dum was on the morning of my father's funeral, which was at the end of April. So again, thank you so much and for building a great community. And, you know, I've had the opportunity to meet several Dumpty Dummers over the last 5 years, and it's been fantastic and made some friendships, formed some friendships, so thank you very much.
These folks is Dumpty Dum, this show about the reality docudrama that has centered an Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm the transcendent spirit that is Royfield Brown, and we've made the hypocritical humbug that is
Lucy Freeman.
And the last part of the christening showdown, folks, is you. Now, this week's Dumpty Dum came from the Academic Archers. Now, Lucy, if I got tweeted, WhatsApped and emailed that once, I had it WhatsApped, emailed, tweeted to me three times. So thank you, Mia, Kat Brown, Nicola Headlam, et al., everybody that sent me that. But did not warm my cockles. Did not warm my cockles. Have you seen the video?
No, not Twitters? Yet. I've liked it on Twitter. I haven't had a chance to look at it yet.
There are two women furiously conducting, waving their arms, and a whole load of happy Archers fans bearing right at the end. And on the overhead projector is a Dumpty Dum mug with our logo. So we were there, Lucy. We were there. So thank you for that, Academic Archers people. And that's a bit of a tradition now, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, yeah. No, it's an annual event.
Are you there, Lucy?
I am,
what
I am,
are you
I
doing?
Am. I'm sorry.
I need you to bring your A game to Dum Dee Dum.
Sorry.
This week.
Sorry. All of us, having got on entirely perfectly well without me for hours, they've all now decided to message me all at once and ask me things about, you know, dinner and who is, you know,
oh,
the family.
Oh, they's the children. Okay.
Yes, everybody, yes.
Right, okay.
Yes.
Well, you know, they say a mother's love is never done, is it, Lucy?
Yes.
But dare I say, it's one of the charms of this podcast, because people like your domestic interruptions.
God knows why, I don't.
Well, it makes people
I find
feel
them
like
highly
they're
annoying.
Well, it makes people feel like they're listening, you know, in on two old muckers chatting about stuff, but it's still part of life, you know, with not some slick operation with producers running around, you know, and whatever. It's a ragtag bobtail.
Not even our greatest fans could call us slick, Royfield.
True that. But I think people like the kind of, you know, as I said, ragtag bobtail. Back, you know, sticky back plastic, you know.
Yes, yeah.
Feeling of this podcast. So
it's a clockwork podcast, isn't it, really?
Absolutely. Well, why don't you tell your kids just to wander in? Well, you know what you should do? You should actually do one episode whilst you're actually cooking, right? So they get the sizzle of the,
oh,
you know, the
me.
Fat fryer going, and Mom, oh, you're not cooking that again, are you? Anyway, I digress, right, Lucy, because we do have a tip-top show to get through this week.
Yes.
And also we have the reappearance of something. Any idea what it's going to be?
No.
Well, I'll leave you to go when it comes on.
Oh, it's not Map Corner. No, it can't be Map Corner.
Well, no. It's not that. Anyway, just go when you hear it. Now,
right.
Lucy, because
yes.
I'm wittering and I really shouldn't, because callers galore, as always. So it's the time of the show when I say, Lucy, if any of our callers would like to send us in a dum-de-dum to rival that of the Academic Archers, how can it be done?
If you would like to sing us a dum-de-dum or leave us a plot prediction, then call us on 0203 031 3105 or leave us a message on SpeakPipe. Thanks to Cosmo for his podcast roundups and for doing the Dumpty Dogs, Chambridge for her brilliant voices, Mike Hatton for his character counts, and to Derek for the loan of the back bedroom where we record. Derek enjoyed a flutter with Auntie Cardboard on the Grand National and just got a nose up behind in the final 5 minutes.
Luce, you know what? You are utterly filthy, you know.
I don't know what you mean. I'm just talking about the...
Yeah, right. Anyway, well done. But there's a reason why my mum can't listen to your little gags at the start of this
Sorry,
podcast.
Sorry, Royfield's mum.
She's a good Christian woman, my mother. Right. Now, quick news, folks. Toronto Meetup News, which is happening this Saturday, April the 13th. If you'd like to attend, email Christina, a.k.a. Sally, at Saturn Express on the Twitters, or possibly even better than that. I said email, that was tweet, that should have been, at Saturn Express. Or then email her at pinkpeonies, and the peonies is spelled P-E-O-N-I-E-S 2013. So pinkpeonies 2013. At gmail.com for details, but there are loads of people coming. Now, Dum Dee Dum Live is happening on Saturday. Oh, that's in red. Go.
Dum Dee Dum Live is on Saturday, the 11th of May, Saturday night, 7:30 p.m. You're only missing Ant and Dec. Anyone can miss that, it's fine. It's £12. Who could resist a night out with the Archers? Emma Grundy, parish councillor and Grundy wife extraordinaire. Emma, played by Emerald O'Hanrahan, rapidly becoming a listener favourite. We also may have another cast member who we are going to have confirmed later on in the week. So as soon as we have it confirmed, or not, well, if we don't have it confirmed, you won't hear anything else about it. If they confirm, I will tell you. And BBC Tour, £15, that's sold out. Oh, I've read that and it's in black. Sorry.
Yeah.
But anyway, the Dum Dee Dum Live is £12. It's at Birmingham Town Hall. And please, please, please come along. It will be great fun.
Yes, it will be utterly wonderful fun. As our Lucy has said, the BBC tour, so the bit where you could have gone round and seen where they do the Archers and how it's all recorded and whatever, gone sold out. Twitter. Don't even bother emailing me saying, dude, I'm trying to book this. The website's not working. You're too late, mush. End of. Right. We're in hot demand. This whole Dumby Dum Day is what people want to be part of. And you snoozed and you've loosed. That's what it is. On this week's episode, we have news from Brian, Vicky, Witherspoon, Maid Marian, Glynn, Joshua, James, Quilted Bunny, and Isabel. But first, before all that good stuff, top of the shop is our juicy Lucy Freeman and her week in Ambridge.
Ben is going through that awkward teenage Jack Kerouac phase of being the only one who, like, tells the truth because you're all, like, so hypocritical and only I can see through the bourgeois sham of, like, being nice to people. There was a bit of an awkward Mother's Day tea with Leonard Exposition, to give him his full name, as he is forever being used as an opportunity. Would you like some more cake, Leonard? Pass the sugar to Leonard, please, Lily, twin brother of drug-dealing Freddie and currently going out with her ex-lecturer. We met Jakob. He's half Swedish, but 100% humourless pedant. I don't eat cake. I don't do small talk. Let's hope he does group sex, or what's the point of him? Obviously, he is self-righteous and boring, so Shula was all over him like a rash.
Hey.
Jazza rotated. Jazza rotated the pigs the wrong way. To be fair to him, it's really hard to get them to point in the right direction and stay that way. It's much easier to rotate them when they're on a rotisserie, but they do get a bit shirty if you try that before they're dead. Will is hunting down a maths tutor for Mia. He had a chat with Russ about it, but dismissed him as a pinko Nancy boy as soon as he found out Russ taught art. Art? However, Ruri stepped in, which I think is a hugely unwise move. If I was tutoring Mia, I'd be terrified of Will. He's like a mafia boss. I imagine him permanently holding a 12-bore shotgun. In the shop, in the pub, in the shower, everywhere. What do you mean a grade 7? My daughter needs a grade 9. Hyper Helen was delighted the delivery had arrived for her. By the sound of it, it sounded like a cheese mite and a pisser. It can't have been, but I listened twice and I could swear that's what she said. It was Bridge Farm, so it could frankly have been bloody anything. The Mont Bellyaches are about to calve, so the entire Bridge Farm family was a trifle twitchy. The cows have been grouchy for weeks, crying for no reason, complaining about backache and repainting the barn. They've also had Johnny out at 3 a.m. scouring the countryside for prawn cocktail flavour knickknacks. He was exhausted before they even started calving. We then had a bit of gratuitous James Herriot-ness, Darabi 385, with Johnny up to his armpits in a cow's fanny. Our uterus is brilliant! Can I have a go? Shouted Tony. That poor cow, honestly. Mon Dieu, just buy a ticket, why don't you? Toby's inherent laziness apparently extends to his creativity. He was sitting on his arse watching Paw Patrol while Rosie was asleep, and the idea came to him. Milk gin. Oh my goodness, where could he have got that idea from? Milk gin sounds frankly appalling, but I suppose we should be grateful that it wasn't minced nappies. Kent and I've had an amazing idea for one of Wayne's special sandwiches. Tom is still worrying about Natasha, the walking overdraft. I think the problem is the difference in their upbringings. Natasha was raised by Alison Steadman from Gavin and Stacey, and Tom was raised in the Amish community. He had a chat with Roy about it. The thing is, Roy, she spends all this money on shoes. At Bridge Farm, if we wanted some new shoes, we had a family meeting about it. Then we drew up a business plan and decided whether or not the shoes fitted into the Bridge Farm branding ethos. Then we bought some cows. Then we sent them back. Then we had a massive row. And then we decided to make the shoes ourselves. And then 2 months later, we bought a field instead. That's why I have no friends. I have always worn fields instead of shoes. Jimmis did one of the greatest takedowns on the Archers ever. Actually, one of the greatest takedowns in the history of takedowns. Shula Hebden Lloyd, the woman that put the hippo into hypocrisy. Toby caused huge amusement by not being able to recognise a baler. Considering how often he bails on things, you'd think it would be the one thing on the farm he could identify. And then we had Ed's inexorable slide into double dealing in the hands of Tim O'Tay. So I have to do driving at night? Okay, just deliveries, is it? Oh, that sounds fine, Tim. Why do I have to wear Emma's tights over my face, though? I mean, I don't mind. I'm just wondering. Then Emma got dumped in the slurry by Peggy Woolley, who has hilariously got Kate to clean the lodge. Senility storyline ahoy. And so begins the class war civil unrest campaign orchestrated by disgruntled Ed and Emma, until they get their own home, when they'll be far too busy choosing bourgeois curtain material to worry about it. Hypocrisy, indeed. The end.
Oh, well done, you. That was so much better than last week, Lucy. No, you know that always consistently rip-roaringly funny. So well done, you. How long did you spend on this one? Was this like, you know, another 5 minutes before we record? Or did you... this? You're not right, are you?
No.
Oh, dear.
Nearly. Much better.
You don't sound nearly right at all.
Well, I haven't had to stop and be sick, so it's definitely an improvement.
Were you sick last week when we recorded?
No, afterwards, but not before.
Good heavens. Right then. Well, on that note, I feel, right, we should try and get through this podcast as soon as possible so you can rest up. Rest that chest of yours.
Yes.
I quite like your chest, you know.
Right, Field?
I do. You know, whenever I think about it, it puts a little warm smile across my face. Just that little picture you sent. Anyway.
Can you clarify that, please?
Well, the picture was little, but the chest isn't. No, but anyway.
Stop it.
You're a healthy woman. That's all I'm saying, Lucy.
I am a healthy woman.
Even if you don't sound healthy right now.
No.
Anyway, I don't know why I'm digressing to talking about your chest when we've got a gabillion amount of excellent calls to get through this week, because it's been a corker of a week on the Archers, has it not? I'm filling, because I'm furiously pressing buttons here, and I've just found where all the callers are. Right. Okay, here we go. So it's time when I do... Lucy, please.
All right.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
Right, first off, it's our Josh.
Hello, Royfield, Lucy, and all of you Dumpty Dummers worldwide. This is Josh from Philadelphia. Again, I'm calling in to say, first, Lucy, I hope you're feeling better after your
obviously
chesty
not.
Cough from last week. I know it's going around here as well. I also wanted to say I got a little bit of a giggle out of you thinking that my Tom Archer sounded like Mr. Burns from The Simpsons. Going back and listening to that, I can definitely hear it. So my prediction / observation this week goes back to Tom and Natasha as well. I was really starting to like Natasha. I thought that maybe she'd be kind of the rational guardian angel on Tom's shoulder. Unfortunately, I prescribe to the theories that many people have that she's essentially pulling him into a financial trap, and it is going to fail. They're way over their heads with this app thing. And I, however, am going to take it to the point where I think this is going to eventually destroy their marriage. I think this is going to turn into Tom being divorced with half of a massive debt. It's going to cause a family rift, especially between him and Helen, as he tries to get a bailout from Pat and Tony for the massive debt that he's put himself into. And all of this will be after he essentially cut out his own family from a scheme that he thought was going to be a cash cow. Between that and the agroforestry, which I don't think is going anywhere, it's all doomed to fail. Tom's going to essentially turn Bridge Farm into what I like to call a shit show. Anyway, Lucy Royfield, thank you for all you do and this amazing community. And a shout out to all who are going to the Dumpty Dum meetup in Toronto. I will see you there this weekend. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye, Josh. Any thoughts and feelings, Freeman?
I like that idea. I like the idea of a massive family rift between Tom and Helen. I can see that, yes.
I'm trying to think beforehand, we must have had little riffettes between them, because Tom was such an arse like 10 years ago or so, wasn't he? But I can't specifically remember them going, right, I'm not speaking to the other, etc. I don't remember
that.
No,
it was just, as always with them, it's jockeying for approval from the parents.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. An excellent way of saying that and framing it. Now, Josh, thank you for that. I'm looking forward to seeing you on Saturday, sir. Now, let's have a little bit of Jilly.
Hello, Dumpty Dum.
Oh,
here, calling in on
that'd be Glyn,
Friday,
then.
But before the Friday episode. this week, I think that the episode's been written by Kerry, Uncle Kerry Davis. I'm wondering whether he's actually been binging on Bergman films. That's the director, not the actress, because he's given us some really quite surreal scenes this week. We've had the one with the first meeting between Jacob and Alistair.
Yeah.
And then we had Will and Rory in the shop with Susan not present.
Yeah.
And then Russ and Elizabeth discussing art projects and getting onto the Stations of the Cross. And it's all been, you know, there's been three of the strangest scenes I think I've ever heard in the Archers. So I hope Uncle Kerry is actually all right. elsewhere, of course, there was also quite a lot on Sunday sort of indicating Freddie as the prodigal son, referencing that story in the Bible. And funnily enough, on Sunday I was in church and it was one of the readings where I was.
Ah.
And the priest pointed out that one of the key aspects is that the prodigal son himself comes to his senses and when he returns home, he's actually with great humility and willing to work for his father. Not sure. I'm seeing a huge amount of signs from Freddie at the moment. So how prodigal he is, not sure. Finally, thanks to the Dumpty Dummers who contributed to my daughter's appeal. That's much appreciated. And everyone, thanks for the podcast and a great week to everyone in Dumpty Dumland. Bye.
Bye. Oh,
you got cut off just at the end there, Glenn. Yes, prodigal sons. Biblical allegories, go.
Well, I was, as we said last week, I think a lot of us were hoping that Freddie was going to come back nicer, more humble, more, I mean, I suppose he's fine, he's okay, and he can't help disliking Russ as much as he does. I mean, we all, you know, dislike Russ, but it's sort of... he doesn't seem to have any air of contrition. He seems to be sorry for upsetting Elizabeth. But he's quite sad that the high point of his week is to be able to go bowling with his mother. And then to go, ooh, and the fun didn't stop that we had pizza. You know, he's not seven. Mm. It was just, I'm not quite sure... we're not having any glimpse yet of where he is mentally after his release.
Well, there was a tiny little window which goes to contradict, a window into his psyche, which goes to slightly contradict the other prevailing evidence, which is the fact that he wasn't exactly fulsome with his descriptions of having porridge with old Ben, was he? He did actually go quiet. And Lily having a go at him about the fact that Elizabeth went bowling wasn't Freddie's fault. Freddie didn't actually know.
No.
You know, Freddie didn't know. And she had a real go at him saying, you know, this is really important. This was all on Elizabeth. So...
but then what the real thing that Lily said was sort of halfway through the conversation when she said, you've got no idea what it's been like here. You're not the only one that suffered. You know, and they always say when someone goes to prison, and especially a young person, it's not just them that goes, it's their family, it's their, you know, it's everybody's life goes on hold for that time. And he is, you know, breezily, hello trees, hello sky, wandering up and down Lakey Hill and saying, oh, isn't it all marvellous, now I'm out. And there's no genuine sense that he does, she's right, there's no genuine sense that he does have any inkling.
No, you know.
She's been having to cope.
That is true. And from Elizabeth's perspective, she has had a slight reality check with Freddie being back, that she thought it was going to almost lift her straight out of her depression. But she did admit that it hasn't been kind of like the miracle that she kind of hoped for. So maybe she'll have some kind of double relapse. But in terms of Freddie having some measure of insight as to, you know, what he's done, there was another tiny little glimpse with the whole stable scene where he did say about what's her name, Francesca, or
Francesca, yeah.
Yeah, there was some hottie, wasn't there?
Yeah.
And he's like,
he said,
why did
she be interested in me?
Yeah. You know, I'm some ex-con. So,
yeah.
So there are little glimpses of a more insightful, potentially contrite Freddie. But yes, he's been a proper hooray Henry at the moment. And and he seems
And also,
like...
wasn't it slightly peculiar at that Mother's Day lunch organised by Jill that she wasn't in it?
Well, there was... I'm going to talk about Sunday's episode, Sunday Just Gone, which isn't in our remit. But just to say that I thought that episode was really odd because there were two characters, Robin Fairbrother being one of them, which were mentioned all the way through and weren't on mic. It was very odd. So they do make a bit of a habit of this and, peculiar in the extreme.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I completely agree with you, Glyn, about that scene in the shop. It was bizarre. Susan would never miss the opportunity to be out in the shop with the people because the only reason Susan doesn't like running the shop because she likes retail. She likes running the shop because she likes, as she calls it, you know, community hub of the village. She loves being in the middle of everything and knowing what's happening and tracking the gossip through who comes in and out and who buys what and who says what to who. And three young men, one of whom she doesn't know very well, all in the village shop at once. There's no way she'd be lurking out in the stockroom, not, you know, she's never done that. She never would do that. And those three just sort of standing there, shifting from foot to foot, occasionally shouting, Susan, you know, it's just nuts. It was a really weird scene. I agree, Glyn, very strange.
Tiny little thing on that stable scene. Freddie actually called Shula. Freddie never does and wouldn't. It's always would be Auntie Shula.
I
know he said a couple of times and I thought, But anyway, moving swiftly on, Mr. Fuller Love, I think we've fully answered the points that you raised and they were tip top as always, sir. Now it's our Marion and she's a maid.
Hi, Dumpty Dum. It's Maid Marion here. I think I forgot the last couple of times I called in that I am at MazSingsUK on the Twitters. I'm just calling to say that I am totally team christening, mostly because I actually tweeted about this last year and said I thought it would be hilarious if Jill found out about Rosie Ruth Grace at the christening and started hurling flapjacks. So I'm really hoping that's going to happen on Sunday. I also wanted to say I was really, really frustrated with this search for an extra godfather because you don't need one. If you Google it, it's quite easy to find. The Church of England recommends three or four godparents, but at least three to the same sex as the baby or child and one of the opposite sex. Rosie is a girl. She only needs one godfather, so Rex would have
one. Oh, I never knew that.
Me either.
Anyway, that annoyed me. I do think the whole issue about whether they're religious or not religious is quite a thorny issue. I know we agonised a lot about getting our daughter and our son christened and making sure that the godparents that we asked were religious and we weren't asking them to swear to something that they didn't believe in. But I do also think that it is a lovely thing to do. And I know the Church of England welcomes anyone to be christened and they are relatively non-discriminatory on that, which is nice. It's a tricky one. Anyway, team christening, just to prove my plot prediction right, please.
Oh, thank you for that, Marion. So we've talked about people who aren't Christians being godparents and actually christening kids. So I'm going to move on from that. I can't remember, Lucy, in your monologue, I'm gonna back up, right? So stuff happened on the Archers last week. We got this christening, but what was your favourite bit of Archersdom last week?
I don't know. I thought it was a bit of a near week, to be honest.
No, you're so wrong.
Was it not?
Lucy.
Jacob. I found Jacob's just refusal to engage with Ambridge hilarious.
Well, particularly Alistair. But, yeah. You know, he has a little thing for Shula and a church organ, very obviously, because he did that. He did slightly warm up to that idea, didn't he?
He did. Yeah.
He did old Jacob. Right. But I've got to say, Lucy, I had a holy shit moment with that gym teardown of Shula.
Oh, God. Yes, I did mention that in the monologue. Yes, that was genius.
I was driving along, right, listening to the podcast, right, minding my own business. I laughed out loud, pulled over and saluted. Seriously, I was like, oh, my God. Right. What a teardown. What an utter teardown.
It really was.
And that was like, so one minute. I have to do one of these. You know, I give these out very sparingly. I was like, wow. Right.
Especially the way it ended when he said, do you know what you are, Shula? And then the scene changed and I was going, what? What am I saying? What is she? And then, thankfully we came back to it, but I was. And I loved it as well when when Alistair didn't rescue her. He didn't say, right, Dad can't talk to you like that. I'm going to have a go at him. He just said, well, he's got a point, which I thought was just great.
No, absolutely. And the fact, because remember last week I said Shula's got no mates. You know, Caroline's, you know, gone, God bless her. Her one true best friend, confidant has gone. She only confides in the church now, via the vicar. She's tried to do a rat. That was crap. She's admitted that being divorced has not given her the freedom, the sense of excitement that she thought it was going to. You know, she, whatever is going on, it's her own psyche that she's the prisoner of, right? It wasn't Alistair, okay? Dan's not about, right? I wonder if she isn't going to have a massive crisis. You know, she's got out of this marriage and she's realised that actually she is alone. And the fact that she, as you said, then she went to Alistair to say, Alistair, that was really horrible. Why go to Alistair? You just divorced the guy.
I know. Yeah.
She's got absolutely nobody. And I was thinking yesterday, as I do quite frequently about the Archers, sometimes I'm like, let's think about the Archers now. I flip between Marvel superheroes, thinking about the Archers, bit of football, bit of politics. Those are the only things that kind of go through my mind, Lucy. And I went on to the Archers yesterday. And I realised as I was parking the car yesterday, I really like Shula. I like Shula. I love the character of Shula. Don't like her as a person, but as a character, tremendous. There is so much going on there. You know, still waters run deep and all of that kind of stuff. And I want her to have a monumental breakdown, of which Alistair and the Rev will be there to witness it. Because I think that's what we've been set up for. I really do. There's a tiny bit of foreshadowing potentially on this week's Archers. And I'm like, what is going on here? And if that happens, I'm all up for that ride. I'm telling you, I'm like, I want to be part of it. I want to watch it. I'll get popcorn, you know, to see all the, you know, the car crash that if Shula, Hebden, Lloyd happen in our ears.
I love the way you say, I love her. And then you say, I cannot wait for her to have a colossal breakdown. What's wrong with us? We're horrible.
Well, no, we want to be entertained by this drama. We've been invested in this thing for years, most of us, decades, right? And she's had it coming. She's had it coming. Right. And now that she's, in effect, released Alistair, or at least the scriptwriters have, We're looking at him going, Alistair always was a nice guy. He had his gambling thing. He had his trouble with addiction, with gambling. he tried to redeem himself afterwards by mentoring other addicts, etc. But there never was any Alistair, was there? There was never enough for you to get your teeth into. Now we're seeing this fully rounded, nice bloke.
Yeah. Yeah.
We are. And we're just going, Alistair's a nice guy. Right. Yeah. And, you know, and she, her one kind of confidant support, she's cut him loose. And what is she doing? Tending graves in the church. That's all she's got.
Yeah.
Nervous breakdown.
She's tried doing drawing.
Yeah, and that was crap.
Men. That hasn't worked.
Yep.
It's rubbish at that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'll call it here first. Massive nervous breakdown. crisis of faith and conscience and whatever. And as I said, there was a tiny bit of foreshadowing. I was like, I'm loving where this is going. Anyway, this show is not about me and my musings, so now it's Brian.
Hello, Lucy and Ryfield. It's Brian, Buggy Swires. I'm ringing because I feel I've been moved to do something I've never thought I would do and defend Shula a bit.
Oh, stop it.
Ooh. And bad timing.
Jim, again, opposite of what I normally do. I think Shula does try. It's not that I think Jim was, much as I enjoyed Jim's takedown of Shula, I think hypocrisy was one that's difficult to stick on her, really, because she does try her best to be a good Christian. But I think don't think she's any more hypocritical about it than any other member of the public, or certainly member of the village. And Jim's, well, I think he's wise defending Alistair. He's not, there's always been lots in the past where there's been hints that Jim hasn't always defended Alistair in the past, and when he's brought him up, he was a bit of a absent parent. So, I think it was a bit hard on Shula there. Again, pains me to say this, it really does, but there we go. other things, I think Jacob, when he turned up, was probably quite surprised to see Alistair was still there and expecting to do things. I think he was there to show Alistair how to use a coffee machine and quietly go away. That's the impression I got. That's why Jack didn't want to talk to him.
Oh, all right.
Cut off in his prime.
Okay, God. Whilst you're having a coughing fit, right, I'll resume running this podcast, shall I? Because you're obviously not fit to Freeman. Right, now, you're wrong, last caller, about saying that it's wrong to say that Shula is a hypocrite. Shula has... Shula prefaces many of her positions by a moralistic stance. If you remember Freddie getting arrested, she said, he's my nephew, but he's done wrong. He's going to have to do some time. She didn't say it as bluntly as that, but that's basically what she said. She took great offense to Alan and Usher because of Usher's religion. I could go on. I could go on, right? She had a crisis in her marriage. Many people do. People have, you know, relationships go up and down and roundabouts. Considering that she confides in Alan about faith, it's kind of somewhat unbelievable, but she did it, that she didn't turn to the vicar and say, I'm unhappy. You know, what does scripture tell me about this, Rev, etc., etc.? She didn't. She trots along to church every Sunday. Right. But when she had the time when she needed solace, guidance, etc., she didn't get it from the one place she professes to take great warmth, direction, strength from, the church. So it's totally...
Well, because she knew that they'd tell her to stay with him.
Well, there you go. Hypocrite. right? Mm. She decided to get married in church and to take those vows. And I honestly can't remember her marriage to Alistair. I can't remember it. Obviously, I was listening, but I don't remember. But I'm guessing, Shula being Shula, she would have taken those vows very seriously. You know, again, foreshadowing Sunday's episode, which we aren't really supposed to talk about because it's for next week's Dum-de-Dum. But she takes great... The fact that she's giving a reading meant a lot to her. So she can't have it both ways. She's a hypocrite. That's what she is. She needs to wear that hat. And I'm looking for...
I think she's going to be a vicar. I think she's going to be a Mrs. Vicar. I think she's going to decide that's the thing that's missing.
You know what? You could well be right. That in effect, she's going to become a bride of Christ. I think, in effect,
bride of Christ, flaming
I'm exaggerating somewhat. But I think that's how.
Shut up. This is how she's going to redeem herself by thingy, because of what Jim has said. She's going to think, you're right, I am a hypocrite. If I expect people to live by this moral code, and if I expect myself to live by this moral code, then I need to do the whole thing and become a vicar. Yes.
But whilst I think that would be a plausible outcome, we can't have her just walk from point A, where she is now, recently divorced, to point B, which is, I'm wearing a dog collar. She needs to go through some shit, right? Because this is a drama, right? So she needs to have a big crisis and whatever, and then she hauls herself out of it, and all of a sudden...
So we're both right.
Yeah.
She has your nervous breakdown, and then she becomes the vicar I think she should be.
Well, it's not my nervous breakdown. She has a nervous breakdown.
All right, you have your own. Let her have hers.
Exactly. I'll have my own, but I want hers to be much more spectacular. Right, now, now it's... maybe a blast from the past, Arlus.
Whee! Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy.
Greetings, Lucy, Royfield, Yoko Bear, and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. It's Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here. I've been MIA the last couple of weeks, very busy with planning my college 40th reunion. 3 years in the making, 4 days, 700 people, many events, major bands, a parade, and coordinating with lots of other reunions representing over 20,000 attendees. I feel like Linda on steroids. It's 7 weeks away, so I'll do my best between now and then to stay on top of the archers and dum-ty-dum. Today, I want to talk about Alistair. First, the trend in medical economics is for bigger and bigger groups to gobble up small practices. The advantage is that the individual practitioner gets a chunk of money, is freed up from administrative tasks, and is guaranteed a good salary. However, every practitioner who sells their practice does it with their eyes wide open. You become an employee, and the pressure to meet productivity numbers is immense. You also do have the responsibility for publicizing services of your practice. For Alistair to be surprised about this was unrealistic. The stress on medical professionals is great, and I've treated a few physicians for anxiety and depression after they joined large groups. Second, Alistair has a new coworker, Jakob. Certainly, the practice would have arranged for Alistair to meet Jakob before Jakob actually started. There was also chatter on social media about whether Jakob has some degree of autism. The scriptwriters certainly were heavy-handed about it, as Jakob had very, very little ability to maintain a conversation. I thought more relevant to the diagnosis was his confusion when Johnny called to talk with Alistair and when he related his conversation with Susan. He appears to be unable to read emotions, which is one of the key features of autism. I don't know how long he'll last on the show if he never wants to talk with anyone, but maybe he'll be Ambridge's answer to Doc Martin. Time is running short. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for that, Witherspoon. There was a whole load of chatter online, and it was National Autism Awareness Week last week. And somebody did say to Uncle God Kerry via the socials on the Twitters, dude, is that the reason why you've introduced him on this week? And he said, Kerry said, no, I've just written him that way.
Right.
Mm. But yes, the line about Johnny, about him not understanding the reason why Johnny called, I think was actually a very good one. Well observed, sir. Well observed.
Yep.
And it was nice to have the theme music back. Anyway,
yes.
Right, now let's do this.
Evening, it's Quilted Bunny here with a bit of info about Hazel Woolley. Hazel's mother was Valerie, and her father was Valerie's first husband, Reggie Trentum. When Reggie died, Valerie married Jack Woolley, although the enthusiasm was really on Jack's side. I think Valerie had more than one affair and finally drank herself to death.
Indeed.
And Jack's devotion to Hazel was basically a carryover of his devotion to her mother. The only thing I really remember about a young Hazel is her turning up at Grey Gables and causing havoc and pouring vodka in the fish tank or pond and killing all of Jack's prize carp. I think that was a bit with the help of a young Nigel. As far as the film thing is concerned, I think when Jack was became ill, Peggy tried to contact her, had a bit of difficulty, and finally, through some sort of business address, tracked down her company in a sleazy building in Soho, which was shared with this adult film company. And when they finally met up, I think Peggy mentioned this, and Hazel's reaction was sufficient to make you suspect that she might have something to do with the aforesaid adult film company. So that's my memory of the thing. Others might be able to fill in other stuff. Okay, keep up the good work. Bye.
Thank you, Mr. Bunny. And now he mentions it, I do vaguely remember Peggy trying to track her down, and there was this kind of business address. You know, I kind of do vaguely remember that. But thank you for filling us in on Hazel Woolley pre-dat, though, Mr. Bunny.
Yes. While we're at it, we asked Cosmo to... I sounded like Esther Anson, and that's like, we asked the gas board, and they said... we asked Cosmo to give us the lowdown on this ridiculous Bridge Farm loan malarkey, whether or not it's a real thing. And in true Cosmo fashion, he was extremely thorough. I will praise it to the effect that, this is what Cosmo has said, repayment will be the business plan, and the bank will want full costings of development, signed agreements from Bridge Farm to use the app, serious market study of the competition, and evidence that other farm outlets will sign up the royalty arrangements. None of that exists as far as we know. Even Bridge Farm was not committed given recent discussions. Finally, if it's a new company, it has no assets and cannot offer any security. Neither Tom or Natasha have any assets, houses, unfettered cars, or other businesses, which could be used as security. Tom might use his partnership at Bridge Farm, but that requires approval of the other partners. I doubt there is any great value in Natasha's juice business, and she has other backers, I think. In summary, the only lender likely to lend this pair money is a loan shark, and they definitely said bank, but I do not believe any bank would take the risks inherent in this proposal. So there.
Goodness.
Thumbs down from
Cosmo, and he knows this stuff, doesn't he?
He does know his stuff. Yeah.
You know, on the Archers, they've got an agricultural editor. Do you think they need a financial editor? Because there's a whole...
I think they just need a life editor for things going, that wouldn't happen. But anyway, a realness editor.
Right. Okay. Well, now we go to one of my favourite callers, and I'm unashamed by saying that, it's my lovely Vicky Cole.
Hi everyone, Vicky Cole here. I'm going to record this quickly before we get the next power cut. We're having a lot of power cuts at the moment because there hasn't been enough rain. Hope everybody is well. Lucy, I hope you're feeling better. And thank you very much indeed for doing the show, even when you're not feeling 100%. Really appreciate it. which reminds me, we haven't heard from Robert lately. Is he okay? I don't know if that was explained, that he was having a break and I missed it. But anyway, Robert, I hope you're all right. Really gutted I can't join you in May. It was just so absolutely brilliant, the last one. I really enjoyed it. Go, if you can. It was brilliant. A couple of things to say about the Archers. First thing is, Freddy has not exactly been chastened by his prison experience, has he?
Mm.
And secondly, this wretched christening. My goodness me, they're getting their knickers in a twist, aren't they? I mean, how weird to even contemplate having a godparent that Pip had never met. I think that's really strange. And then this name business, well, something's going to happen, unless it's a red herring, because they had that sort of cliffhanger, well, everything's going to be all right on Friday, didn't they? Does Robin know about the name Grace? I think he does. And Toby never told Jill, did he? So I predict that Robin will let it out to Jill before the ceremony. And then what? Do we think Jill's going to have a stroke or a heart attack? It's all anyway, that's it, really. Love to everyone. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, Vicky. sorry about clearing my throat there, listener. Luce, let's quickly run through a couple of other things before. I don't know if you've got any emails or anything you want to go through. But I was mightily touched by the whole Mia and Ruwa Ruwari. I thought that was somewhat sweet. And I must admit, I like it when the younger characters have some form of interaction and there's a little bit of a dynamic. We know, or at least we suspect, that our Rory has got a little bit of an eye on Mia, though.
Well, I think it's the other way around.
I think it's both ways then. Because there was the incident.
But Mia's 13.
I know, and that's what I was about to say. There is a bit of a gap between them. And Rory must be, what, 16? And at that age, that's a very big gap.
And you only want older women when you're 16. You don't want younger girls, do you? I mean, there are very good reasons why you don't want...
You don't know boys at all, Lucy. Have you ever been a teenage girl your whole life?
But for a 16-year-old boy, i.e., sorry to put it crudely, but legal, you're not going to be going after a 13-year-old girl, are you?
Luce, you've completely forgotten... that about 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, she was in the shop. He wanted to give her a lift on his bicycle home.
Yeah.
He likes her.
I think he feels sorry for her.
The reason why he volunteered to go around there. I'm not saying it's going to be the love of his life, but he's got a little bit of an eye on her, right? And I'm not saying...
No, he said it's always good to get to have people owe you favours. He said that when they were getting the barn ready for the
When he says, do you want to jump on the back of my chopper? That's not what he said, right, Lucy?
Nudge, nudge.
That's not at all what he said, right? Anyway, there is something brewing up between the pair of them, and it's nice. And for me, it feels somewhat kind of innocent. And I had to take a tiny half a step backwards, considering how I've castigated Will for being quite a crappy parent, or at least a parent that doesn't notice what's going on with the children under his care. And he does have some level of insight, and he proved it by discovering, even though it's literally all down to him, that Mia is falling behind with her studies, but then doing something about it, though. You know, being
He didn't discover it. He got told it at parents' evening.
Whatever.
You didn't have to be Hercule Poirot. You could have noticed it anyway. And what actually happened in that scene was he said, thank you very much, Rory. Are you getting on better now, Mia? Yes, I get it now. Are you hungry? I'll go and see what we've got for dinner. When what could have happened was that while she was doing the work she's supposed to be doing, he could have been cooking the sodding dinner.
Listen, we know he's rubbish, right? I'm just saying he could have been a little bit more rubbish. The other thing that I would say is, being somebody that came from working class roots, it Dunharth surprised me. And it's one thing which I notice and I do remark on all the time, the difference between how the working class treat education and the middle class. It's always the middle class kids that their parents give them extra tuition, sit down physically with them, do their homework, get them tutors, etc. My parents, and I think I mentioned this way back when on a previous podcast, utterly typical of their class and of the culture that they came from, in that you go to school, school is really important, but they didn't really equip me personally with the other skills to supplement what I was learning at school. And they saw it very much as, you do your homework. My mum and dad never sat down with me and said, right, what are you doing in maths today?
Yeah, no.
They might have said, do you have some homework to do? Go do your homework. And whatever.
Yeah.
So in that
same.
In that way, you know, Will is playing very much to type, but he doesn't know how to sit down and engage and stuff. But, you know, he knew that she was falling behind, et cetera, et cetera. So beat him up, yes, but like, I give him a little bit of a bligh there. But yes, you are right. Then, you know, he wasn't making the dinner. So
we've had an email from Sam.
Okay, good.
Who told us about Hazel, but we've done that bit with the films. Mm-hmm. He said, I'm not sure whether Sandy is a boy or a girl. Mm-hmm. While we're talking about Hazel, does anybody else recall a later visit to the village when she was given her marching orders by Peggy when Jack was unwell? My recollection is that Peggy had put a stop to whatever she was trying to do by buying her off, with the trade-off being she would not inherit anything when Jack died. When Jack did pass away, I was surprised when she did inherit and there was no reference to the earlier storyline. It was one of those discontinuities that invariably make me snarl at the radio. For the record, I'm a Sandy, having started to listen in the 70s when the radio was on as I dried the dishes for my mother. Sandy was a bit part ne'er-do-well with whom Neil had an association that ended badly. I remember that, I think. And I do remember the stuff with Hazel, because Hazel sort of arrived and started being really, really unctuous around Jack. Oh, daddy, da-da-da-da-da, and all that. Mm. And Peggy sort of took control of her and said, basically, I know what you're doing, Missy, and you're not having, you know, you bugger off now and I'll pay you off and I don't want to see you again, sort of thing. But then, Sam's right. She then did inherit anyway. So that's quite odd.
Mm, true that. I suppose, you know, the one person that can put this whole debate to bed is our Cosmo. So, you know, Cosmo's got a brain for this type of thing. So Cosmo, if you just want to completely underline what Sam on the email has actually said, and then say, yes, there was this scene where she was going to be disinherited and then she got this stuff, that'd be great. And then we'll all be the clearer. Then we'll know there's been a screw up in continuity and the script editor needs shooting. Right now, just whilst I'm on it, Lucy, right? Mm-hmm. This Jolene, and can she actually sing? Right. Yeah. And we know.
Yes and no is the answer.
We know that the script writers love their little funny names, don't they? So we've got Finn Buckley. All right. Tory with Finn Buckley.
Finn Fuckley. Yeah. Yep.
What?
Finn Fuckley.
What? Please. Number one, is there a country music circuit where somebody can go off and tour around small pubs in the UK? I would say no. Right?
I would say yes.
What? Really?
Well, yeah, it's quite popular again now.
Well, it's funny you should say that, right? But there was an article in, I don't know if it was The Guardian. I'm going to say it was The Guardian, 2-3 days ago, about American pop stars that have never made it big in Britain. And 3/4 of them were country and western singers, so like Garth Brooks, and it just was a whole load of people wearing big hats and silly shirts, right? And they're like massive over here and they tried to break the UK and stuff. So we've never taken to country music on a whole.
But now we've got this weird kind of country hybrid, haven't we? I mean, people say Taylor Swift, Taylor Swift, some of that's kind of like pop country, and there's lots of what's she called? I completely forgotten her bloody name. Begins with M. I'm going to have to look her up now. young female singers that have kind of bridged the gap between, it's not all sort of, you know, yee-haw country. It's kind of more ballady, more, you know, all that stuff. Anyway, keep talking.
I'll fill. Right. So, you know, Malcolm Gladwell. And everybody likes him. Yes. He's got a rather good podcast, Revisionist History. One of the reasons why it's so great is because though he takes on these kind of thorny big topics and gets you to look at them from another perspective, i.e. the desegregation of schools. Guess what one of the outcomes was of desegregation of schools in America?
Country and Western music.
No, right? It was the fact that a whole coterie, a whole class...
Maren Morris, that's her name.
A whole class of black educators were thrown on the scrap heap. Never gets talked about.
Right.
You know, what happened to all these black headmasters, headmistresses, teachers, heads of department?
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Because actually, then the state educational system, in inverted commas, i.e. the ex-white one, didn't want to employ them. Right. But they would always take on like one black teacher. So anyway, revisionist history is brilliant for that. It gets you to look at history from a different perspective. But then he interrupts that with his own views and his own likes. And the dude is into country music. And I'm like, what kind of black man are you? Who likes country music? And he's not even American and he's not Southern. Right. The dude's parents, one of them was Jamaican. He was born just outside of London, grew up in Canada. He's got no business liking country music, but he likes the mournful, sad aspect of it in terms of the lyrics and, you know, the whole kind of redemption and da, 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 da. Right. And I found that episode fascinating. Still hate the music, though. I'm going to say I think that you have to be kind of be born around it to appreciate it. And you could say that really of just about...
I like it.
But you don't know, Lucy. You tolerate it. You tolerate it. You don't like it.
No, I don't. How do you know whether I like it or tolerate it? I like it.
I've never heard you talk about country music ever.
Well, I don't talk about music.
That's
do
not
I?
True. You talk about music in passing quite often. And then I remark that, your musical knowledge is quite broad and you like stuff, but I've never heard you say, "Oh, there's this slamming track from Garth Brooks or some twingy twangy."
No, I don't like that sort. I'm trying to.
Yeah, the country sort of country music is not the type that you like. As I said, you don't like it. So let's move on from that. But my fundamental point was: is there a country music? You've answered this, but I'm going to question it, and maybe I'm really throwing this out to the listeners. Is there really a small country music circuit in the UK which is big enough to support somebody going on tour who is not a professional musician? I would call kind of bullshit. If this was in London, I would maybe go, okay.
And if, you know, Kenton's going on about, there's roadies and, you know, proper hotels and all that stuff. I don't believe that. There's not enough money in it
for
that.
There isn't. Not at all. Not at all. And that's what I'm talking about.
It would be getting changed in the pub loo. You know, people trying to watch the football over your head while you're singing, all that stuff.
Exactly. And let's say you've got two places to do in Birmingham on a Friday night, right? You're going to drive from Ambridge to Birmingham, do them and drive back.
Yeah.
There is no tour. Yeah. It's just too small a scene, which is my point. And then you had to throw in all this Malcolm Gladwell stuff and you actually quite like Garth Brooks, you know, trying to like confuse the issue, Freeman. Stop it. Keep on script. It's too small. It's nonsense. And the other thing, which was nonsense from last week, and I say this somewhat advisably because it was our Uncle God Kerry which wrote this. There is no way that Alistair would not have been aware of Jacob. Both of them are equine vets. Felpersham is how far from Ambridge? 15 miles, 10 miles and whatever. Yeah. You're going to have known him by reputation, if not actually have bumped into him once or twice. Sorry, Mr. Uncle God Kerry, love you dearly, love your moustache, love your work. You slipped up slightly there, sir. Anyway, now, emails, and shall we go on to advertisements? I'm in your yes. hands. All right. So it's advertisement breaks. So if you live in the United Kingdom, possibly United States or another territory of the world where Acast sees fit to put adverts in, you'll get an advert right now. If not, it'll be straight to the yokels.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, Dumpty Dum, it's Yokel Bear here, calling with the social media roundup. And you have to forgive me sounding a little bit bunged up, because I've got yet another cold. Two in quick succession. What a lucky boy I am. Anyway, enough of my sniffing and coughing. Let's get on with the roundup. So we asked this week, did you find Ben and Freddie's honesty refreshing? Marion Fenton said, I thought Ben was great, and Ruth was so wrong in trying to talk him round. And talking of Ruth, Heather A. Fossey said, I think I'm old enough to remember Ruth standing up to the Archer clan to ensure that Pip wasn't christened back in the day. Do you know what, Heather? I do vaguely remember that as well. So I don't know. We'll probably have to get Cosmo or someone to fact check that for us. But I definitely have a memory of that. Alison Hyde-Mark said, thank goodness for Ben. But it wasn't all good news for Ben and Freddie. Drew Hamilton said, I thought Ben was a right git, as I believe you Brits say. Yes, we do say, Drew. That is the phrase that we say. Gillian Corrigan said, Ben had the right to refuse the invite, but not to be so rude about it. I think that's probably good. Yeah, that's, you know, I think, was he rude? I think he was more assertive.
Rude.
But I don't know. But other people disagreed and didn't like Ben. Alex Russell quite bluntly said, honestly, I just resent wasting precious listening minutes on the precocious little twats. Drew, that's the other phrase we use. And Jed Robinson said, nah, both are annoying little shits who need a crack. No, Freddie. Not that kind of crack. But it wasn't Ben who was being honest this week. Jim, oh my Lord, the conversation between Jim and Shula, it's rather marvellous, wasn't it? But we asked, was he justified in what he said, or was he talking out of turn? Fiona Griffin said, it was brilliant. It really brightened up my day. Shula is totally deluded. Why should Jim be all pally and supportive of her? I would just told her to F off, but I have far less class than Jim. Go, Jim. Off you, and I'm sure you've got class. Becky Land said, it elicited a guffaw from me. Shula is insufferable and self-centred, which was beautifully illustrated tonight. I cheered for Jim. Hear, hear. Rachel Kennedy said Jim was brilliant as the voice of the nation, and then Shula had the cheek to run to Alistair to try and assuage her guilt, honestly. Yeah, I thought that was a bit cheeky of her, really. Go to your ex-husband for the sympathy. But then again, I think there's something developing about this divorce is not really working out for Shula in terms of kind of moving on and whatever. You know, you sense that she's kind of lonely at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
However, not everyone agreed that Jim was in the right. Janice Betson said Jim was unnecessarily rude, but typical of an elitist atheist. I think Jim is a little bit elitist. Probably, I don't know, a good way maybe? I don't know. He's the prof, isn't he? He's the prof. But anyway, Matthew Joseph Burt did make a point where he said, I'm so glad he said it. She's just so oblivious to her sheer hypocrisy. As a Christian, it really riles me how little thought she appeared to give her marriage vows and how easily she justified it. Of course, I will forgive her, though. Grumble, grumble, rah, 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 says Matthew. Yes, turn the other cheek, Matthew. That's what I think needs to happen here. Now, it wouldn't be a Yoko Bear week on the Facebook page without me presenting you with a series of indicative votes.
Yay.
As you know, we do love a people's poll. So this week, we placed this indicative vote out to the Parliament of Dumpty Dummers. Do we think that Russ and Elizabeth will end up having an affair? Well, the votes are in, and it's a clear majority, which is unusual for indicative votes in Britain at the moment. It's a little political joke there. Whilst 33% said, no, it isn't going to happen. No sex, please, we're British. 67% of you thought they're going to be at it like rabbits. Oh, yes, it's going to be messy if that happens, isn't it? Not messy. Mm. I mean, messy as in the relationships, not messy as... Anyway, I'm just going to move on to the next thing. And we met Jacob this week, who was kind of interesting, kind of a bit dull, kind of interesting and dull. Can somebody be interesting and dull? Anyway. Now, we did have a bit of a discussion on the Facebook page about... You know, whether Jacob would be, is possibly on the autism spectrum, stuff like that. But I'm not going to go into those comments because we also had earlier in the week a post about, we know virtually nothing about Jacob. So post your wildly unsubstantiated speculations and predictions about him. And as usual, you all rose to the challenge. Nick Meredith actually raised an issue of concern about Jacob. He doesn't eat cakes. How will that go down in Ambridge? I'll tell you what, Nick, if he's not in a Wicker Man by May Day, Ambridge is not doing its job. Joanne Smith said she feels that he's going to start a passionate affair with Shula. Remember, you heard it here first. Yep, if that happens, Joanne, you're going to get the credit. Amy Sturley said he's reticent because on a visit to Ambridge some years ago, he got drunk and made off with some bunting on a dare. Now he's too afraid to make connections with anyone in case they learn his horrible secret. Yes, he's the bunting thief. That one's a definite. Leslie Hughes says Rob has had plastic surgery and is planning to kill all the Ambridge animals in revenge. Oh, my God, like the vet on The League of Gentlemen. Oh, God. Linda Snell posted... I don't know, but the piercings studied... I'll start that one again, shall I? Linda Snell, is it the real Linda Snell? Said, I don't know, but the piercings, studded leather knee boots and noir to death face tattoo might be a giveaway. Whereas Lynn Soyan Fletcher said, he's in a witness protection scheme. Sorry, I meant he's a witless rejection tween. I did like that one. Sue Smith said he suffers from pantoequinophobia. Guess the fear of being in the pantomime horse come Christmas. And Paul Dishman, you get reply of the week, who replied to that from Sue with, oh, no, he doesn't. We all love a good panto call. But we also speculated as well. Charlotte Eyre posted something saying, is anyone think that Jacob is going to be Shula's new love interest? Dave Campbell said, sullen, inexpressive, self-righteous, and apparently painfully dull. He's the full package for Shula. Which probably has to be my Facebook comment of the week. Anyway, I'm going to take my bunged-up nose and my sore throat away now and go and get myself better. So, next week you'll have the lovely Millie Bell, and that's the social media roundup for the week. Bye!
It's all right, mate. thank you for a wonderful roundup as always. And we're going to see him in Brum. So there will be a yokel bear on stage. And I presume that he's going to do his social media roundup live, because that's what he did last time, didn't he?
And I think Robert is coming too, but we don't know what he's doing yet.
Yes, Robert will be doing something. And so, yes.
A dance. Expressive dance.
That'll be really good on a podcast, dance. Lucy.
Yeah. But the audience would like it. Not sure Robert would, but anyway.
Mirror headlines, please.
Tanya Bardsley banned from Ladies' Day Style Award for entering a horse.
I'm sorry. Say that one more time.
It's Ascot. Mm-hmm. Tanya Bardsley banned from Ladies' Day Style Award for entering a horse.
Well done. Well done.
To I love the fact I'm taking the credit for these. Yeah.
Well, you've been curating them, Lucy. You know, you're bringing them to a wider audience. Actually, is our audience wider than the Mirror circulation? I doubt it.
Probably is, actually.
Right. You got a proper bad chest. So I think we're, luckily for you, we're on the home straight. So why don't you hit us with some tweets? I'll wrap it up and then you can go get vixed up or whatever you got to do.
Okay. Dr. Sally Ann Huxtable, £10 say Jacob is gluten free. Of course he is. Ruth Arian, Ricard don't. Marmaduke said, before the Montbelliards came, it was all there. No trouble. They carve easily. Now they're here. It's a very different histoire. Very good. Ambridge Pony Club. Hung like a donkey and all set for Adam is my plot prediction. I presume she means Jacob. And tweet of the week. Ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm braced.
Ryan Tring, mm-hmm. who is my friend, who only occasionally listens to The Archers. But anyway, Ryan Tring, talking about the christening. Mm-hmm. Rosie, Grace, Phil loved her more. ITV starts tonight. Shall we watch that instead? Grace, Archer.
Very good. Very good, sir. Well done. Dumdydum.com, folks. Go there. It's got a shop. But more importantly than just going to the shop and dumdydum.com. No, it's very important to go to the shop because you help to support the whole podcast and keep the whole kit and caboodle on the show. And actually, Lucy, somebody bought one of our super long in the body tees yesterday. I'm trying to think who it was. Yeah. Because, you know, you got those, and I must admit, I'm a real fan of the old t-shirt that goes way past your waist, goes like another 2 inches longer.
Yeah.
Because if you've got a little bit of a tum, as I've started to develop one in the last couple of years, it's slimming. It's quite slimming on the old figure.
Yeah, but you have to be careful that they don't do that tent thing that happens to Jeremy Clarkson.
Talking about Jeremy Clarkson, who's been having naughty dreams about him, Lucy.
I know. It happens every time I watch. Honestly, it's really awful. But last night it was both of them.
So does he go like a V6 or V8?
Well, I think his big end's gone, to be honest.
So whenever you watch, was it Grand Tour?
The Grand Tour.
Yeah, you have a dream.
I end up having an erotic dream about one of them. Last night it was two of them.
Oh, gosh. They double teamed.
No, not both at the same time. Oh. I don't want to talk about this, but anyway. My God, we've gone into great detail about my chest, and now we're talking about my erotic dreams.
Right. Awesome. Anyway, as I was saying, those long T-shirts are quite slimming, right? And I think they're a little bit fashionable. I know it's a little bit 2016, but I don't know. I kind of quite like. Anyway, we have them in stock, gentlemen, ladies. And we sold our very first one yesterday. It came in a very fetching kind of like grey with the legend Dum-de-dum emboldened in white on the chest. A little bit long. It's called a dipped tee. Anyway, so we've got all manner of fashionable things on our store. So you should go there. Goodness, I'm getting American.
I have not got one item of Dumpty Dum clothing. I really ought to get one, shouldn't I?
Well, I tried to voiced some on your family, didn't I? Because you said your little lad is going to come up to Dumpty Dum Live. I said I'll send him a Dumpty Dum T-shirt.
Oh, but he's too shy to wear it.
But who wouldn't want to wear a T-shirt that says Lucy V. Freeman is my mum?
To be honest, Royfield, I think I embarrass him enough simply by being his mother. He really, really doesn't need anything further to point that out.
I love my mum, and I would love you to be my mum. I think you must be an awesome mother, and I say that with all seriousness. Right, the love and affection that you have for your family is writ large on this podcast and also when you post on the Twitters. So he's very lucky to have you as a mum. So there you go. Now, go on to dumdydum.com, folks. And go, if you're going to go on for just this one reason alone. Book your tickets for Dumpty Dum Live, which is Saturday the 11th of May at 7:30 p.m. in Brum. Now, I did say last week that if I got 10 people basically saying, Mush, sort out hotel rooms, I'd sort them out. Now, I've had about 4 emails, so 4 in a week with people saying, what's the situation with hotels? I think I should just do it, considering we're, what, some 5 weeks away from the live show. So I'm going to try and sort out 10 rooms, have them reserved somewhere it's nice and close to the town hall, because we're all going to be in and around Brindley Place. I presume that after we record, we'll have a little bit of a drink, et cetera, et cetera. So don't let the fact that you've got nowhere to kip put you off buying a ticket. Go buy these tickets. They're going like hotcakes, right? And you don't want to be left out. You don't want to be the dumdy dummer. It's like, oh, I should have really gone to that, blah, blah, blah. Go on to dumdydum.com. You'll see Dumpty Dum Live on the homepage. We have an Emerald and possibly another actor on the Archers. We'll be on the stage with Lucy and I and with Robert and with Yokel Bear. So just like get it sorted.
I'm on the shop and I can't see a dip, whatever it was you said.
Okay. All right. Let me help you out, Freeman. Admittedly,
Did you say it was dip or deep?
I call it dipped, but it's probably deep. You know me and spelling. Right, I'm just going to Shopify. All right, bear with me. Because I actually thought there's 2 T-shirts which I actually thought would have sold more than they actually have. And it's that one. Actually, let me just go to dumdydum.com. I'll end up editing half of this out 1 minute.
There's pants.
Do you mean proper underwear pants? All right. I'm in men view all. There it is.
Oh, aren't they women's ones?
It is dipped. It's the same. It's the same, Lucy.
Oh, okay.
But there it is.
I'll get one then. But yeah. I want a V-neck.
All right. Well, then I'll have to make a V-neck. So.
Oh, no, it's all right. I'll just buy the one, except it's grey and I don't like grey and I want white.
No, I think there's other colours. If you click on it, oh, there's only 2.
Oh, no, I can see it.
Yeah. There you go. But I thought we'd have sold more of these, to be honest with you. And that and the T-shirt, if you're looking at the men's, the Dumpty Dum Grass Verge T-shirt with the Dumpty Dums right at the bottom.
Oh, yeah.
I really like that. I thought we'd have sold more of those as well. But anyway, book those bloody tickets, folks, because you know it's going to be lots of fun. And then you'll be able to peruse and socialise and partake and by breaking bread with other Dumpty Dummers, and I'll put my teeth in. All right, so another way of which you can support us is by going on to patreon.com and sign up for $2 per show. And that's just another way of supporting the podcast, because then you get extra special content with either Lucy and I interview somebody who's in and around the world of Ambridge and the Archers. And so only special people get that content. It's people that go to patreon.com and give us $2 per show. Also, you can support us by writing a review on Apple Podcasts, formerly known as iTunes. It's a great way of exposing the podcast to new listeners. So go on there, write us a review, think we're awesome, writes an awesome review. Think we're shitty, writes a shitty review. Just write the review. Just be honest, you know, vent your spleen if needs be, or just bathe us in a warm glow of sunlight and sunshine if you think we deserve that too. Especially
don't
our
bathe
looseness.
Us in your spleen, though. That sounds horrible.
Well, it does. Remember, to get in contact, you can send us a message via... send us a voice message via SpeakPipe on our website, or you can call us on 0203031 3105 to leave us a telephonic message. On Twitter, you can find Yokel Bear masquerading as Dumdy Dum. You can also find Yokel Bear at Yokel Bear. Lucy's at Lucy B. Freeman. I'm just saying this for everybody, and I can be found at Royfield, spelled R-O-I for India, F-I-E-L-D. On Facebook, you can join in with Millie Bell, Witherspoon, and Yokel Bear's goings-on by simply typing in Dumdy Dum. Lucy's got a bad cough. So that's me signing out. Lucy?
Yes, sorry about the coughing, chaps.
If you've got any remedies for a middle-aged woman who's chesty in more ways than one, right, why don't you send them
Chesty Morgan, that's me.
Why don't you send them in via SpeakPipe or email to Dumdy Dum, and I'll make sure that Lucy gets it and gets all the help that she needs to get over her chesty business. That's me done. Thank you, folks, for listening in to another corking, rip-roaring episode of Dumdy Dum. This is me, Royfield Brown, signing off. Lucy, would you like to sign off? Can you sign off? Do you have a voice left?
I can. Goodbye, everybody. And sorry if I blasted your eardrums off with the occasional spluttering.
And I'm just going to leave you with this note. I love Shula Hebden Lloyd.
Ooh, you little maverick, you.